Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Dwaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasudeva Gaur, Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath, Shanya Kunda, Radha Kunda, Giriyavardhana ki jai. Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai, Mathura Dhamma ki jai, Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma ki jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. 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 All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Patrani Nivasai Sisanyavadi Paskatade Sutarni. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamana Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Panijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Vita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shri Manchakalpa Drupascha Kipasam Vyavatapati Tanam Pavanevya Vaishnavam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Paranjana becomes a woman in the next life, Text 2, and this is on August 18, 2021, in Hawaii over the internet. Tarekada tu rabasa. Paranjana purim nirpa. Ruru dur bhoma bogadhyam. Jarpanagapalitam.
They.
Ekada.
Ekada.
Once upon a time.
Two.
Then. Rabasa. With great force. Paranjana Purim. The city of Puranjana. Nripa. O King. Rurudhu. Encircled. Boma Boga Adyam. Full of sense enjoyments. Jarat. Old. Panaga, by the serpent, Palitam, protected. Srila Prabhupada's translation.
I'm still working.
All right, well, at least the echo's gone. Once the dangerous... No, it's not gone. Srila Prabhupada's translation. Once the dangerous soldiers attacked the city of Paranjana with great force. Although the city was full of paraphernalia for sense gratification, it was being protected by the old serpent. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As one's body engages in sense gratification, it becomes weaker and weaker daily. Finally, the vital force becomes so weak that it is herein compared to a weak serpent. The life here has already been compared to the serpent. When the vital force within the body becomes weak, the body itself also becomes weak. At such a time, the death symptoms, that is, the dangerous soldiers of death superintendent Yamaraj, begin to attack very severely. According to the Vedic system, before coming to such a stage, one should leave home and take sannyas to preach the message of God for the duration of life. However, if one sits at home and is served by his beloved wife and children, he certainly becomes weaker and weaker due to sense gratification. When death finally comes, one leaves the body devoid of spiritual assets. At the present time, even the oldest man in the family does not leave home, being attracted by wife, children, money, opulence, dwelling, etc. Thus, at the end of life, one worries about how his wife will be protected and how she will manage the great family responsibilities. In this way, a man usually thinks of his wife before death. According to Bhagavad Gita 8.6, Yam Yam Bhap Isaram Bhavam, Twajachante Kalevaram, Tam Tam Eva Tikantaya Sadatad Bhava Bhavita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. At the end of life, a person thinks of what he has done throughout his whole life. Thus he gets another body, Dehantara, according to his thoughts and desires at the end of life. One overly addicted to life at home naturally thinks of his beloved wife at the end of life. Consequently, in the next life, he gets the body of a woman, and he also acquires the results of his pious or impious activities. In this chapter, the acceptance of a woman's body by King Paranjana will be thoroughly explained. Tarekada tu rabasa puranjana purim nirpa duru dir bhoma bhoghadyam jarat panaga palitam. Once the dangerous soldiers attacked the city of Paranjana with great force. Although the city was full of paraphernalia for sense gratification, it was being protected by the old serpent. So there are signals in life that tell us that it's time to make a change. It's time to shift. And here we're looking at the part of the story where Paranjana is getting these signals, but he's not noting them. He's not responding to them properly. And of course, the biggest shift happens at death. And so this purport Prabhupada's talking about preparing for death and what happens when we don't prepare for death. I don't know if your system went down.
Some things changed in my system, but I think it probably was on your end.
All right, so I reconnected through a different system.
Okay.
All right. So here we're looking... I'm not sure how much you heard.
Unmuted.
So here we're looking at signals for making a change. We're getting that echo again. We're looking specifically at the time of death, preparing for the time of death, and, you know, what kind of happens by default if we don't prepare for the time of death. So there are these signals in life when it's time to make a change. You know, there's something going on, and we have indicators that things are shifting. I remember one time I was working on a project at a particular temple, and I was being facilitated, sponsored, you could say, by the head of the school there. So, in cooperation with the temple president. And then the head of the school decided that he was going to change his service. So he stepped down, someone else became in charge of the school. And I thought, maybe, you know, I'll go off video then if there's things. Anyway, I was there, and the person who was facilitating me, sponsoring me, he stepped down, and I thought, it's time for me not to be here anymore. It's time for me to move on to something else. So we see these sort of signals in life. We see these indicators that it's time to make a change. It's time to move on. I mean, sometimes these are very obvious indicators. You know, you get to be a certain age, or you graduate from a program. You know, or sometimes there's like a subtle change in one's mentality. I was speaking to a devotee yesterday who said that he had done a particular service for many years, but then there was no joy in it anymore for him. Somehow the joy was taken out of it, and he realized that he needed to switch to another service. And sometimes what's right for us at one time is not right for us at another time. Sometimes, you know, to be in a particular place with particular people doing a particular job, a particular service, is what we should do at a certain time of our life. And then as life goes on, we really should be doing something else. But there are always indicators. I mean, some of the indicators are in our mental state, our emotional state. Here we're seeing indicators in the physical state that the life there becomes very weak. The serpent becomes very weak. And these sort of symptoms of this major shift, I mean, we have many minor shifts in life. One goes from being a student to getting married, right? Or one goes from being a student to getting a job, or switches to another kind of job, or goes from just being married to being a parent, or goes from taking care of young children to the children growing up, or gets a different kind of job, or gets a promotion in one's job, moves to a different city or a different country. So then there's this big shift that happens at the end of life, the big shift of death, where the whole false identity that we have built up gets dismantled. All of our family, friends, associates, skills, knowledge, possessions, all of these things, abilities, we lose all of them. So in the little shifts in life, you know, some of those things may change. One may change one's residence, one may change one's associates. But just like when we go from school to family, we may not see the people we went to school with anymore. And there's death is all of these things change. The whole, as we say, kit and caboodle. The whole thing shifts. And there are symptoms of this. I mean, some people die very suddenly with no warning. Some people are in good health, they're young, and they have a sudden car accident and immediately die in the accident. And this does happen. But for most of us, there's some kind of symptoms. I mean, here, the symptoms of old age are this weakening of the senses. Right? So generally, you know, our eyes can't see that well anymore. Maybe we have to get glasses. Or our ears can't hear. We may have to get hearing aids. But we can't remember things as well. Right? And I have one godbrother who stepped down from the service because he said, I just don't have the memory that I used to have. But we don't have the physical stamina. You know, our bones get less dense, our body starts collapsing. Right? As we get old, the body collapses. The teeth, the gums recede, the teeth rot. Digestion doesn't work as well anymore. I mean, you just go through the whole list, right? Our body doesn't heal as well. We get a bruise, it takes longer to heal. Basically, all the systems of the body start to degrade. Like the hair doesn't have its youthful color. The skin doesn't have its tightness, its sagging, it's wrinkled, it gets spots on it. It just gradually, one by one by one, there's these symptoms. We see this with material objects. You know, you buy a material object, and it's all shiny and new, and then it gets scratched up, and it gets worn down. Like I'm looking at my computer, so there's a place on the space bar that's really worn down. And there's certain letters I must use a lot more than other letters because they have worn spots on them. So the body also gets worn out, and as Prabhupada said in the previous verse, you know, the more you use your body improperly when you're young, the more it's worn out when you're older. So these are the signs. And an intelligent person takes note of signs that there's a change. So I always like to give this analogy that when Krishna wants his cows to go from one place to another, he will call them by name. And if they don't respond, he'll play his flute. And he also then has a buffalo horn, horns. Actually, Buddha Swami says he has blowing horns from all different kinds of animals. And he also has a stick and a rope. So, but he doesn't use the stick first. He uses calling them by name. It's explained that Krishna has japa beads, but instead of being made of tulsi wood, they're made of jewels, of precious jewels. And on the beads, he counts his groups of cows, the leaders of his groups of cows. And as he's collecting his cows, he calls the leaders of each group by name. So he doesn't resort to the stick immediately. And the same way with all the transitions in life, even for an ordinary materialistic person, the signs are first gentle. The signs gradually increase in intensity as one does not listen. I mean, we also do this if we're trying to communicate something to somebody, and if the communication is important, if it's an important communication. So, and especially if we know that not only is it an important communication, but it may be an uncomfortable change for the person. So first we communicate gently. And if the person doesn't respond to the gentle communication, then we may push a little harder if it's something that cannot be ignored. So we also do this, right? We will increase the intensity if it's ignored. So Krishna does this as well. And for the big shift, the old age happens slowly. It usually starts somewhere around age 40. The Prabhupada's youth is 15 to 40, where, you know, the skin isn't as tight, the hair isn't as dark, and pretty soon, you know, you need glasses to read and so forth. So that, you know, by the time that you're 85, then, you know, anyone just glances at you and says, yeah, someone can just see by the way you're walking that the body is old. Yeah. So these are the signals. And these signals are there to say, make a shift. So this ashram dharma is about four main stages of life. A stage of life to study, a stage of life to have a family and earn a living and basically keep the world going. A stage of life to retire, and then a stage of life to prepare for death. So in the stage of life to prepare for death, Prabhupada talks about being a preacher. Not just taking care of one's own spiritual life and one's own transition, but taking the accumulated wisdom of a lifetime of spiritual practice, ideally, and helping others on the spiritual path. Because one of the best ways to prepare ourselves for our transition after this life is to help others. It's an educational fact that the best way to learn something is to teach it. I experienced that hundreds, if not thousands, of times. That when I'm going to be teaching a section of Shastra or some concept from Shastra, I am forced to learn it in much more depth than when I am acting as a student. And I'm much more likely to apply it because I'm much more absorbed in it as a teacher. So this concept that the preparation for death includes teaching spirituality is very sound. And of course, in all traditional cultures, old people who are nearing death are considered a source of wisdom for their accumulated lifetime of experience and knowledge. So in addition to teaching about spirituality, one wants to make sure that what one is likely to focus one's mind on will be congenial for this transition. Even in the smaller transitions in life, we focus on our next step. If someone's going to move from one home to another, they start putting their main attention into the new home. Their main mental and emotional attention into the new home. About a year ago, I shifted from staying with a friend to staying in my own room here at an ashram. And I started putting my attention into the new room. So, like, the light fixtures on the walls were broken, and the sink was broken, and the stove was broken, and the door was broken. So I was, although I was still staying with my friend, most days I was coming to the new room, and I was checking on the work that was being done to repair everything, and then I was deciding, you know, what kind of things I wanted to purchase. I wanted to purchase some pots, and a desk, and a chair, and things like that. So I was focusing on the new room for some time before I moved into it. Or before a person gets married, they're focusing on their spouse, they're focusing on their upcoming wedding, on their honeymoon, on their new domicile, for some time before they get married. Right, I just spoke to a devotee the other day. He said, oh, we're getting engaged, we'll probably get married in a year. So, a year to think about how you want to live your life. And he was asking me questions. You know, how should we live as a married couple? Should we do this? Should we do that? So his focus is on the future. Right, or if the woman's expecting a baby. So there's 9 months of thinking about how are we going to raise this child? What, you know, we're going to decorate the room and get the paraphernalia to take care of the child. The example given when Vasudev is talking with Kamsa is about an inchworm. So if you've all seen an inchworm, a little tiny bug, a little tiny green bug, and they have feet at either end and no feet in the middle. And when they want to figure out where to go, they're waving their bodies in the air, trying to find where they can latch on their front legs. And once they've latched on their front legs, they let go of their real legs. So this training for death is that we put our attention toward where we want to go. We absorb our mind where we want to go. So again, it's not just that we're teaching spiritual life, but we're changing where our absorption is. Again, we've all done this. We've done this with moving to a new place, or getting married, or having a child, or getting a new job. I mean, even getting a new car or getting a new computer or something. You know, you get a new computer, you get a new phone, and you're setting up the new computer, you're setting up the new phone. And you let go of your interest in the old. You no longer meditate on the old house, or the old car. It's gone. It's not your concern. It's not where you have your attention. So what happens when we are supposed to transition to death and we put our attention still on the identities of this world that we're about to leave behind? I mean, sometimes people do that. Sometimes people are moving to a new location, but they don't really want to move to a new location. And so they're still putting all their effort and energy and thought into where they are now. And so the whole move becomes very uncomfortable for them. I remember when I was growing up, we had a beautiful large apartment in New York, 70th Street and Central Park West. And we also had a summer house in New Jersey. So at a certain point, my parents decided that they were going to give up the place in New York and move to our summer house in New Jersey and then get a bigger place in Jersey. So it was a decision that my parents made together, but my mother didn't really like the decision. She felt that they were making this move because of some mistakes my father had made. She was very angry with my father. And even after we moved to New Jersey, she spent most of her time in New York and never really accepted that she had made that move. It was interesting, my mother's lack of acceptance led to my own identification. I basically don't identify as being from New Jersey. I identify as being from New York, although I actually lived slightly, I guess about the same amount of years in New York. But I was always going into New York with my mother, and that was how we identified. It was a big reason why, after I got married, my father divorced my mother, and my mother very quickly moved back into New York. So this happens when a person is getting ready to leave the body also, that they just don't accept that it's time to move on. I mean, we see this phenomena happen in people desperately trying to look young. You know, and okay, that can work when you're in your 40s and your 50s, maybe in your 60s. But by the time you get to your 70s and 80s, it becomes an absurdity. You know, the people who are getting plastic surgery, lots of cosmetics, you know, clothing that pushes them here and there, whatever, you know, wigs or dyed hair, whatever they're doing. But it looks absurd. They don't look like a young person. They look like an old person trying to look like a young person. So you have that, or, you know, some 80-year-old man marrying a 20-year-old woman, that kind of thing. But even for people who don't do that sort of thing, this sense of attachment that I still have my responsibilities here, and I have to take care of my responsibilities here, instead of I'm moving on, creates another body. It creates a sense of, again, doing things in this world. And it's interesting, of course, that Srila Prabhupada says how, you know, a man will often think of his wife and take birth as a woman. One could imagine that the woman would often think of her husband and take birth as a man. And as a little side note, I mean, it's not the main topic here, but we can assume that each of us have taken birth as human males and as human females. Going through this, and maybe we've even switched, you know, every other life or every few lives or whatever. I mean, I'm sure some people are a man over and over again, or a woman over and over again. You find some people who, I'm sure partly because of this, feel that, you know, I'm in the wrong body, that they got so much used to thinking of themselves as a man, and now they're in a woman's body, and they think I'm still a man, or they got used to thinking that they were a woman, and now they're in a man's body, they think they're still a woman. So, you know, in Vedic times, you could shift the body from male to female, like with Ula and Sujumna. And nowadays, they try to imitate this with surgery and chemicals and this sort of thing. But there may be a sense that I haven't transitioned. I mean, talk about real, you know, really getting stuck in the past. Not being able to move on. You know, or sometimes you'll see a person, they end up taking birth in another country, but they're still associating mentally with the country that they had in a previous birth. And so they want to go to that country and learn that language and take up that culture. You know, they're not going forward. Bhaktivinoda says, if we remain attached to what we've left behind, that attachment acts as chains around our feet. And so most materialistic persons are simply taking birth again and again and again because of attachment to this world that they're not willing to let go. They want to stay here, and often with the same people. So, I mean, I know a number of cases of people who are told by notable astrologers that they've been married to the same spouse for, you know, 12 lifetimes or 20 lifetimes or 16 lifetimes, and sometimes one of them would be a husband and sometimes the other one would be a husband. You know, or some family combination that's repeating. So, you know, the person who was your brother in your last life is your daughter in this life, and your grandfather from another life is now your wife and this life. And Prabhupada said also people like to imagine like that. Oh, this is the same person. But we have these repeated associations because we can't give up our attachments. And of course, if people are very sinful, then they can have it not even as a human being, you know, two trees that grow together. and we think it's very romantic. You know, we cry about these things in sentimentality. The husband and wife who die 2 minutes apart, holding each other's hand, gazing in each other's eyes. You know, as I say, it's a really extreme and bad karma. You can become trees growing together. Think of like conjoined twins, and people are really attached to each other, and they get literally attached to each other. Of course, in this case, for King Karanjana, his next birth ended up to be wonderful. He took birth as a human woman, but he ended up marrying Malaya Dwaj, who was a great devotee. She ended up marrying Malaya Dwaj, who was a great devotee. And she became herself a great devotee, and she went back to home back to Godhead. So this next birth as a woman was very auspicious for Paranjana. It was much better than his birth as Paranjana. Of course, this is an allegory, but still it was in that birth as a woman that she took up pure devotional service. But in general, one should not become attached to things of this world. And the idea is, again, at the end of life, that we make not only an internal change, where we focus on teaching Krishna consciousness and we put our attention to the spiritual world, but we also make an external change, where we physically separate ourselves from sex, money, family concerns. Now, not everybody in Vedic society, not everybody did this. In fact, only the brahmanas literally took sannyas. The kshatriyas would take vanaprastha, and the vaishyas and shudras would not leave the grihastha ashram. But in some way, to make some kind of also an external change. To not try to go on at the end of life as one was doing in one's 20s. I remember visiting one family where the husband's mother was living with them. But she was very elderly, and she was very physically frail, but she didn't interact much with the family. Basically, she was just hearing and chanting and reciting slokas. And the family was taking care of her more in terms of taking care of a sadhu than taking care of a family. So as one starts approaching death, one should become less and less and less involved in the details of the family. How someone's going to be maintained financially, or where they're going to live, how they're going to go to school, and become more and more absorbed in the activities of the spiritual world. And we see this phenomena throughout the Bhagavatam. We see so many stories of these great kings who are anxious to have the successor be qualified so they can retire. So they can not only internally absorb themselves, but externally remove their concerns about family, their concerns about career, their concerns about management, and go to a place where they can really just focus on their spiritual life. Now, at the same time, we don't know when death is going to come. And even if one renounces the world, most of us can't renounce the world the way Sukadeva Goswami talks about, where he says, you know, can't you just lie down on the road with your arms as a pillow? Because in our modern society, the trees don't give clean water. The trees don't just give fruits. People don't just throw discarded clothes on the side of the road. It's really not much facility in modern society, unless you are living in Hawaii, where there is a lot of facility for that kind of life. But in most places, that's not the case. To live like that is difficult. I mean, I remember this one man in Vrindavan. He passed away a few years ago. But for, I think, 14 years, he lived on the Parikrama Marg by the Krishna Balaram tree. And he literally had no possessions other than a blanket. He had no clothing. All he had was a blanket, and regularly people would give him a new blanket because he didn't have any, like, laundry on. And he just stayed at the side of the road. People gave him food and they gave him, renewed his blanket. And that was it. But in most cases, that's not the case. So in most cases, even if somebody's a sannyasi, they're still having to take care of some of the physical aspects of life. They're still having to take care of health care. They even have to be taking care of some kind of living facility, or maybe a car, managing some things in the world. They're not able to let go of it completely. And even Srila Prabhupada, in terms of his family, you know, he didn't originally when he left his family, but once he founded ISKCON and there was some money coming in, he did make some provision for his wife and his children and so forth. So there may be some of that at the end of life, or else one could say that sometimes one dies young. Like I say, sometimes there aren't signals, sometimes you're young and healthy, and you die in a car wreck. I'm thinking about Balabi, who died in a motor rickshaw accident between Vrindavan and Govardhan some years ago. It was completely sudden and unexpected. So what about death like that? So therefore we are advised that we should, even if we are young, and even if we are in the midst of the responsibility of taking care of a family and a career, that we should always have our main investment in Krishna. So Rupa Goswami gives the allegory of an adulteress, a woman who has a lover other than her husband, where she's doing her household jobs very carefully, but her absorption is, when am I going to meet my lover? When am I going to meet my lover? Now, she's not with her lover all the time. She only has certain times when she can sneak away and be with him. So a person in that situation is only going to have certain times for absorption and hearing and chanting. But their consciousness is always, when am I going to have that time to be with my Lord? When am I going to have that time to be with my Lord? Or I like to give the example of a secret agent. So a secret agent goes into an enemy territory with a cover story, you know, and whatever it is, I'm an electronic salesman, English teacher, whatever. They have some profession and some reason to be in that country other than being there to spy. But the real reason is they're there as a spy. But they don't behave that way externally. Externally they behave as if they have some legitimate business, some legitimate job. Right? But they're motivated, and they have to do their job well, or they're going to be thrown out of the country. But their main purpose and their main absorption is how to spy for my own government. That's what's actually motivating them. So even working in the world, even when we're young working in the world, we need to have our attention on the transcendence. We need to have that as our focus. Because we don't know. We may get a lot of signals over a long period of time. We may get gradual decreasing of the bodily functions for 50 years. And we may be in a sudden accident, or we may get a notice if it's 1 week long. We don't know. So we have to be prepared to transition at any time. Although we take responsibility in this world, we should take responsibility in this world in the mood of service with our consciousness on the higher realm. Now, if Mahaprabhu's movement was successful in the world, if the International Society for Krishna Consciousness were able to fulfill its 7 purposes, one of the things which would definitely be achieved would be facility for the elderly, to help them make this transition spiritually. Not all elderly people are going to be able to be taken care of by their family. Sometimes the strain on the family is too great, the needs of the elderly, particularly elderly persons, is too high. There's, and even if they are being taken care of by the flood, there still needs to have provision for how to take care of the elderly to help them make this transition. How to help people who are qualified to take sannyas and to preach do that, and for those who cannot take sannyas, which is going to be the majority of the population, how can they detach themselves from these family responsibilities and focus on the spiritual? You know, at the present time in 2021, most elderly people don't have this kind of facility. If they stay in some sort of housing for the elderly, it's not spiritually conducive. You know, it's basically something to take care of their physical needs. And that's about it. You know, what are they going to do for their other needs? Play checkers or watch something on television? It's really a very sad situation for a lot of elderly people. This would be definitely one of the ways in which Mahaprabhu's movement would revolutionize the world, is to help older people in their preparation for this transition. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Although there's a lot of people talking about it, I mean, Gurudas has really dedicated himself to this. And there was an initiative started by ISKCON leadership called ISKCON 3.0. And one of the groups that's come out of that is working specifically on facility for the elderly and the disabled. I mean, there's some young people who need that kind of facility also because of disease or accident. So there certainly are a lot of people putting their attention to it. Whether or not there'll be enough there for those of us who are elderly right now, I don't know. I mean, what I see is happening for the elderly devotees right now is individual caregiving. I mean, here in the community where I live, we have two that I know of, two elderly devotees who are pretty close to housebound. And there's other devotees who take care of them, but they also have caregivers funded by the government. So they don't have, it's not that a devotee is taking care of them 24/7. So they have some, you know, government-funded caregivers, and then there's devotees who go in like a certain number of hours a day and are with them. I mean, one of those ladies can get out and about a bit. You will see her around occasionally. One of them I never see. So mostly we have that kind of individual care. If somebody needs so much care that they need to be transferred to a home, then we don't really have a lot of facility other than like the Vrindavan Hospice. But there are places that are working, and hospice is only for someone who's going to leave within 6 months. Whereas we have a need for people who are going to require long-term care but are not right on the verge of death. And it's something that a number of people are putting their attention to and are trying to work on it. I'm not sure of the details.
What is Vrindavan Hospice?
That Giriraj Maharaj started that. It's a facility for people who have some sort of terminal diagnosis where they have 6 months or less projected that they're going to live. It's right off the Purikma Mart, past the Krishna Balaram tree. And if people can't afford it, it's free. Although if people can't afford it, there's some minimum that they're, you know, asked to contribute. And it's basically a facility run by devotee doctors and nurses and healthcare providers so that people can get end-of-life care. Quite a nice facility. I mean, it's basic. After all, it's a Vrindavan. So it's pretty basic. But it's very nice.
So it's a good start.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people thinking and talking about this.
Yes. One might be feeling from within that there is time for a change, and one might have no idea how the change is going to come. One may have some ideas. Then that, how is revealed? How it comes to happen?
You mean what exactly the change should be?
Yes.
Well, usually Krishna unfolds it in some way. But part of it is our willingness to accept that. I mean, sometimes it's kind of forced. I think we've all experienced situations where it's forced.
It caught my attention because there might even be prayers for this. Since one has the feeling within, one might be praying within. And that's why, since you came to have to be in this class, that's why I'm asking, because one might be praying, but still one might not find it out.
Well, Krishna always tells us at the right time. The main thing that we need to know is we need to be sensitive to noticing that a change is needed and be open to hearing at the right time in the most gentle way. That's all we need to do. We need to cooperate with it and not resist it. And sometimes that's very hard, and sometimes it's very confusing. I mean, I went through a very confusing time when the COVID lockdown first started. I think a lot of people did. That, you know, I was staying with a friend who made it very clear that I couldn't stay with her permanently. And I had no other place to go. So I knew I had to make a change, but I didn't really know where, how, or in what direction. At least for a couple months, it was extremely confusing. And there wasn't any kind of clarity. I mean, it was 2 months before there was any kind of clarity, and I'd say it was probably 3 months before things were really decided. And before that, it was just, I know I've got to make a change, but I don't know what, and I don't know where, and I don't know how. And that was mostly, it's mostly a matter then of just being open. Okay, Krishna, you know, show me whenever you want, however you want. And I'm not going to fight you on it. Sometimes the change is obvious immediately, but sometimes it's not. But as I say, the main thing is being open and being receptive and not trying to hold on to what you have already. You're trying to go back to what you had before. Is that all right? Sometimes Krishna's answer to prayer is yes, sometimes it's no, sometimes it's wait. I mean, if you think about just in our human relationships, sometimes a person may ask us for direction and we can see that they're not ready to get the direction yet. So sometimes we may say, well, you have to do some other stuff first. No, it's not the time yet. We need to be prepared, but it's not the time yet. We do that even in our human interactions. Why wouldn't Krishna also do that? I know with my getting the place here, I had to make a pretty substantial internal shift before I was willing to accept what Krishna wanted me to do. It was in my own mind as a viable alternative. And so if Krishna had told me on day one what he wanted me to do, I wouldn't have accepted it. I would have just said, no way, I'm not going to do that. So, you know, I had to go through some changes on my own before he could say, okay, this is what I want you to do, and before I could say, okay. So it's being willing to go through that process, because sometimes there's a preparation for making the change, a like I said, sometimes a change happens overnight. At other times, it takes some time. I mean, I remember a very, very major change I made in 2007. And it was really like a year of... I didn't necessarily understand that at the time. But it was basically a year of Krishna putting me in different situations and different experiences so that when it did become clear what shift needed to be made and how it needed to be made, that I was willing and able to do that. And if I had asked a year before, it wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have worked. I would have said, I can't do that. Actually, I could have, but I would have said, I can't do that. I had to learn some things. I had to experience some things before I could say, oh, yeah.
I got a question.
Yes.
In the Varnashram system, you've got the Brahmanas, you have the Kshatriyas, who renounce, but the Vaishnavas and Sudras who don't. Since most of the population is Shudras, some Vaishnavas, why Srila Prabhupada was really stressing that everyone should take sannyasa in the book?
I think it's an excellent question. And one has to consider who is his audience for what he's writing. You know, sometimes he's writing for everybody in the world. Sometimes he's writing for his disciples. Sometimes he's writing for anyone who considers themselves a devotee. You know, it's, even though it's the same book and the same purports, he's not always speaking exactly to the same people. But I also understand that even if one doesn't technically take sannyas, one needs to adjust one's mentality. Everybody has to do that. Even if you're a Shudra, even if you're a Vaishya. You know, if we're still attached to this world and this family and this home at the time of death, we're not going to be able to go where we want to go. We'll come back to this world in some way or another. So that kind of sannyas, you know, like Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, and Arjuna asks him, what's a sannyas? What is sannyas? What is tyaga? And Krishna there is not talking about sannyas as an external ashram. He's talking about sannyas differently. So that kind of sannyas, yes, everybody should try to do. Not everybody will, of course. But everybody should try to do that kind of sannyas. As Ravindra Prabhu put it in one article, die before dying. This sort of civil death where we no longer feel that we have responsibility for the things in this world. And again, we could still do them as a service, like the secret agent or the adulteress, but we don't really feel that it's our responsibility. That if our master calls us someplace else, we're ready to go without holding on and without regrets. And without, but, what about? You know, maybe we'll be able to get everything sorted out before we die that we'd like to get sorted out, and maybe we won't. Is that all right?
Sorry, I want to put on my mute button. Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.